You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, welcome back to the pod, everyone, as we welcome in Mr. Jake Fraley. Your first Gym Day podcast experience. Thanks for hanging out with us. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me.
Now, even though you got traded over to Reds last season, fans still getting to know you probably. Let's start there with where do you make your offseason home?
We're out in Miami. We've been there for the last 7 years. We have most of my wife's family is there, so they derived from Cuba. They came over to the States together as a family. It was a really unique situation when she was 9, and then they made Miami their home. Ironically, before I even met my wife, I was like, Miami's the place I'm going when I get drafted. When I was at
really?
LSU, yeah. One of my good buddies, he's like a brother to me, Christian A. I played with him at LSU. He comes from Miami, and you know, he asked me if I wanted to come down for Thanksgiving break freshman year, and I was like, yeah, you know what? You know, let's do it. I've never been to Miami. And I went down there, and I remember when we first got in there, I looked at it, and I'm like, I'm moving here when I get drafted. And this was before I met my wife.
Wow.
And then fast forward a year and change forward, and ended up meeting my wife. She's, like I said, from Cuba, but most family's in Miami since she was 9, and Miami's been my home since.
Some things are meant to be, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. The good Lord, man. He's blessed me.
Well, we'll talk about that coming up, but... I knew your wife was from Cuba. Did she have the experience of having to come here the hard way?
Yeah, and she didn't. That's what made the situation with her very unique.
Yeah.
I might have a little bit of the story, not as detailed or right as far as the details wise, but for the most part, the story was, so at that time, I want to say it was, she was maybe 6 or 7, so a couple years before, because all the paperwork takes years when they go through this process. So I would say, like, when she was around like 5, 6, or 7 years old, the government of Cuba was doing a lottery. And so families around the island would have an opportunity to basically like put in like a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
So like the father of each family would put in their mm-hmm. name. And if you got picked, you would be able to come over to the States legally through the government as a family. So her family got chosen, and so they were able to come over to the States as a family, as a whole, legally through the plane, like didn't have to go on like the boats and all of the crazy stuff that you hear about that does happen.
Yeah.
And they were able to come over together.
Yeah. I've heard some crazy stories, some guys that have, played the game and they don't, it's changed a little bit, but they were scared to even talk about it because like, I still have family back there. I don't really want to tell you what happened to me, but it was bad, you know.
Absolutely.
Road.
It's the government over there, it's a tricky thing. And like when you come from there, you have to be very careful, especially if you have plans of wanting to return, right? So like if you voice anything as far as like something within your family and what you guys did, or if there's family that's still over there that's doing something or helping you or you're helping them, it becomes very tricky when it comes to that aspect.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You settled in here? You and the Cincinnati Reds, a good match here?
I love it here. Me and my wife talk about it all the time, how, you know, we're believers in Jesus. And so, you know, we believe that he has his hand in everything, right? And you know, I was able to fortunate enough and very blessed to be given the opportunity by Seattle to get my foot in the door in the big leagues and had a few years with them. It was phenomenal. I learned a lot. But man, when we came over here, I felt it immediately. You know, it was weird because I had one day in camp when I was in Seattle last year in spring training, and then I got the trade happened.
Yeah.
So I unpacked my locker there and then turned around and packed it back up about 4 hours later. And then
that's
the next
craziness.
Day I was over here in this locker
room.
And I remember going back after the first day and I was like, babe, this is awesome. Like,
what's the difference? What made it so awesome?
The culture. The culture over in Seattle was good with the players and all of that. But I think here it's more of the culture with everything. It doesn't stop anywhere.
Yeah.
It goes from not only the clubhouse to the staff, to the training staff, to the strength staff, to Ashley is the nutritionist. And I mean, every facet of what goes on here, I feel like, has an extremely good culture and a good atmosphere to it. And when you're talking about a game that we play that's so difficult, it takes a lot of, you know, stress on your body and your mind. You pick up on those things because those little things, when you're off of the field, you feed off of it, right? It's contagious. And so, like, I like to think of it as two things. And I got this from my mental coach that I work with. I work Vanessa in-house. I use her a lot, but I also have a mental coach off-site, Brian Kane. And he uses two terms. You're either an energy giver or an energy sucker. And I feel like everybody here is an energy giver, and you feel it every day that you're here.
Wow, that's interesting. I hope I'm an energy giver, although there's people out there listening or watching TV who thinks I'm the opposite. So I get it. It's very subjective out there. You were very open. We first talked about this last year at midseason, the mental aspect of the game and mental health in general. And you were very open about, you know, mental health is real. Depression is real. And when you got hurt, and then during that process of rehab, you kind of rediscovered yourself. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to also take a moment and thank you, Jim, for letting me the opportunity to be able to speak about this, because it's a huge passion of mine. And I think a lot of athletes, especially on, you know, the top of their game and their specific sport, don't talk about it enough. If you go around the past years, I mean, I really think, at least in my opinion, what I've seen, the only person that's really been very vocal about it, and unfortunately he's not here with us anymore, but Kobe Bryant. And I refer to him a lot because he's one of the very few that have been very outspoken on as far as the mentality and how the mind needs to work within elite, you know, performance sports. But absolutely, I think of myself as like Jake 2.0 now. Like a completely different person, because I am a completely different person. And I think if you ask my wife, she would agree too. it was a huge change for me. And it got to a point where last year when I broke my foot, it was the second time that I'd broken that bone, same way. I'd broken it previously in 2017. And it was just kind of a breaking point for me. When I was with Seattle in those 3 years, trying to get my feet wet in the understanding of, you know, what it takes at the big league level. And then I was having a few of just freak injuries and things happening to me that didn't make much sense, because I'm very on top of everything that I do from every facet, you know, the nutrition side, the strength side, the mobility side, obviously the baseball side. And I kept having these things happen to me, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I kept having to go back to the drawing board. You know, what am I doing wrong? What could I do better here? And when I got over here, it was like, okay, I got a, you know, fresh face is a fresh start. I got a team that wants me. You know, when you're traded for guys like Eugenio Suarez and Winker, it's a big deal, right? Those guys are studs.
That's tough, because they're upset on this side and you're the new guy. Like, you're not a Eugenio.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a whole nother facet to it as well.
Yeah.
And so it was exciting. And then, you know, I have a good spring break with the team, and then I start out a little slow, and then all of a sudden these things start happening again. I had tendonitis in my knee that I'd never had problems in my knee before, figured that out. And then I was one game away from coming back from being on the IL, and hit a base hit up the middle on my last rehab at bat, and just hit first base after I hit the base hit up the middle and broke my foot again. Freak thing. I have no idea how it happened. And that was my breaking point. And I remember getting on the talking with my wife, spending time with the Lord, and I just felt like I couldn't pick myself back up. And I got on the phone with my agent, very close with him, Matt. And I was like, Matt, I don't know what to do anymore. I have no direction right now. And he was like, well, have you ever thought anything about mental coach, like, you know, mental performance coaching? And I was like, absolutely not. It almost gets to a stigma with that of, like, you're weak, right? Because I'm at the top of my game. I'm in the big leagues. I'm playing this game that I've been blessed with. I know I can do it. It's like, why do I need that? And he was like, just give it a try. Just get on the phone with Brian. And at this point, I had already talked to Vanessa a few times, and she was really helping me, really encouraging me. And she gave me a couple of exercises that were really helping me. And so I was like, you know what, fine, I'll give it a try. So I got on the phone with Brian, and I was on the Zoom call with him for about an hour. And once that Zoom call ended, I was all in. I was like,ago to do this. I'm going to give it a try. And it was the best decision I ever made in my life.
did you hit, what was rock bottom like? I mean, I know it's different and everything's relative out there. There are some people that are suffering from things that are obviously away from sports. So everyone has a different situation. But what was rock bottom for you like?
It was, baseball has always been my happy place. Right. So, and you, anybody that's listening to this can associate that with anything in their life. It doesn't, for me, it's sports. And a lot of people have a lot of different things and hobbies and things that they do that are their happy place. Right. And so when you think of your happy place, this place that you go to, that you kind of like divert from reality, you get away from all the struggles and all the things that happen in life that aren't, you know, good. And that was baseball for me. And I lost that. I quite honestly, I hated what I was doing. I had no love for what I was doing. I had no drive for what I was doing. And it's crazy to sit here and like, even right now, listen to myself say this. But it's the honest truth. And it's because you get to a place where you just don't care anymore. Like I would give it, like if you asked me in those moments, or those days, I would have told you without a hesitation, I'd give it all up and go do something else just because I couldn't take it anymore from the mentality standpoint.
Yeah.
It was tough.
What were the nuts and bolts? Like when you said, there's no way I'm doing that. And a lot of people do that. And we've had that saying out there now, it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
Seek help. I would imagine you're a proponent of that now, but what was going in through your mind that made you think, no, I don't want to do that? And what changed your mind during that Zoom call?
I think it was a big part of it was Brian explaining the people that actually use mental performance coaching that you don't realize. And it's unfortunate because this is, again, this is why I started off this by thanking you for giving me a platform and an opportunity to speak about this, because nobody talks about it. And for me, I didn't know like all of these guys used mental performance coaching. Like Brian, one of his early on, so he was a mentor under Ken Revisa, and Ken Revisa is like the freaking OG, El Jefe, whatever you want to use, yeah, of mental performance coaching. And he mentored under him. And when he started getting into like, you know, his own, when Ken passed away and Brian started doing his own thing, he started working with George St. Pierre in the UFC. And this was one of the first guys that Brian mentioned when he said, you know, you feel like you don't need this, or it's, you know, it makes you weak. Well, you're talking about one of the greatest pound for pound fighters in the entire world.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about, excuse my language, a badass.
Yeah.
And this guy needs a mental performance coach, and he realized that he did. And so when I started thinking about that, he mentioned, I'm like, wow. I'm like, a guy like George St. Pierre. And I had no idea. And so, and he mentioned Corbin Burns. Brian specifically changed Corbin Burns' career around with the mental side. And so he just started naming off these guys. And I'm like, man. I'm like, I've never heard of any of these guys ever mentioning or talking about this very much. Or maybe I just wasn't paying attention. And when he mentioned off those specific guys in different sports, and especially for me, I don't know why for me, but in my mind, I was like, man, you're getting in a ring to fight, and this guy needs a mental performance coach. So I was like, man, I might need one.
Yeah, I play baseball, which is really hard. But baseball, though, is a game of not, I mean, the percentages, it's a game of failure.
Mm-hmm.
So you better be mentally strong. Was there a moment... I know you said you did the Zoom call and you're immediately all in, but was there a moment during when you're rehabbing your foot to get back that you're like, wow, this, the light went on. This is the greatest thing that I've done. And when you said it was, but when was that moment?
I think for me, it was that first game back after I came back from the broken foot. Well, the tendonitis and then the broken foot that correlated into one big stint. It was that first game for sure, because coming back to that first game, you know, you have the rehab games, and yes, I was able to apply it and put it into play and action in those rehab games, but it's not the same, right? You can't correlate or emulate what it's like at the big league level.
Right.
So coming back that first game and first series against Baltimore was like, okay, let's put my, you know, put the money where the mouth is, right? Let's see how good this is. Let's see if this works. And I went into that game and I felt like for the first time really in my life, I felt like I had complete control over myself. And I was able to stay within myself no matter what was going on. And after that game, I was like, all right, let's go.
Right. What was the reaction of the wife? You said if you asked her, it's like night and day. So what was Jake before this, and what's Jake like now away from the field?
I was super pessimistic. I had no good, like, I had no separation from work and me being a father and a husband. And I had days where I was, right? I did have that separation, but again, you can imagine those days were when I had the good days at the field, right? And like you mentioned, this game is a game of failure. Yeah. You know, this is, I mean, our brain has such a, it can't associate with, okay, we're playing a game that you're if you fail 70% of the time, you're really freaking good. All it associates with is, no, you're failing a lot.
Yeah.
And so that's where the trouble comes in, and that's where you need something as far as like separation. And this is like the meat and the potatoes for me when it comes to mental performance that I think needs to be talked about a lot, because it's not just baseball. It associates with every sport, and not only sport, but life as well, right? Because any job that you have some type of performance that you're trying to put on for you to keep your job or to be promoted, right? To stay within what you're doing and what you love to do. And I think it starts with being able to be able to separate yourself, right? So Ken Revisa has a saying that if you make your work, you know, life and death, you're going to die a lot. And nobody wants to die a lot. It's awful, right? I mean, you can't even imagine that, right? Because death only happens once for us. So it's being able to have that separation of, okay, this is what I do, but it's not who I am. And having keys for yourself, like, so for instance, like for me, my kids made me a bracelet that says Papa, and I wear it all the time. And if you see me anytime when I'm not in baseball clothes or away from the field, you'll see it on my wrist. But when you see me at the field with baseball clothes on doing stuff, I will never have it on my wrist. And for me, it is something that is physical that I can touch and see that allows my brain to associate with a moment of separation. So think of it like Superman. So you have Clark Kent and Superman, right?
Well, good analogy.
Yeah. So it's exactly the same thing, because, you know, I have a hard job to do, and I'm doing it at the highest level that I could possibly do it in my profession. I need to have that separation. I need to be able to have that understanding that when I get to the field, like, I'm a different person, and I am. And you need that, because so for me, it's when I get to the field, it's the last thing that I take off of my body after I change, and I take a moment to recognize, allow my brain to recognize, okay, and I take a breath and I'm like, I'm gonna take this off and it's gonna be waiting here when I get back. I say that to myself every day, and then I take the bracelet off and I put it down. And that is me transitioning into Jake the competitor. And it's and I'm able to do that because I'm very blessed with who I've married, right? My wife has the home taken down. Like, she has the kids taken down. Everything is taken care of. I have nothing to worry about. So when I get to the field, I am Jake the competitor. I put the phone away, I put the bracelet down, and I'm ready to go. And I never had that. And so that allows my brain to be like, okay, you're now transitioning into Superman. And we're going to be like, we're going all in, and I'm going to rip the head off of anybody I got to face. And I think it creates a purpose in everything that you do. So everything that I do from the time that I get to the field to when I leave, it has an intent and a purpose to it. It has precise behaviors behind everything that I do. So like there's three, so I live my life by three principles. And there's another saying that I love to use, and it's little boys live out of preference and men live out of principle. And I have three principles that I live by, and anybody can do this. And it's when you think of principles, it's just think of like, and you could do 1, 2, 3, you could do as many as 10 if you want. I use three, and it's three words that describe who you know you need to be on a consistent basis to be the best version of yourself. And so for me, it's being present. So being able to be in every single moment, like I am right now, being completely engaged in conversation or whatever activity that I'm doing with no distractions. And neutral. So my next one is neutral. And a lot of people don't understand this. I never understood this. But when you think about thought processes, you think, okay, you can have a positive or a negative thought process, right? So you think of a coin, you have positive, negative on both sides. Well, what if I told you there's a third way to think, and it's a neutral way of thinking? It's almost like living on the edge of that coin. And it's a way to be able to be, you know, the way I think of it is I use an acronym. It's called WIN. It's called What Is Important Next. So my mind is only set on what is next, what is important next. So I'm always focused on the task next at hand. And that allows me to be in a space where I have the ability to respond correctly to whatever is happening around me, right? So you have no control over what happens to you, but you have complete control over what you respond and how you respond to it. So for me, living in that neutral mentality of, okay, the game's over. I went 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts. Had an awful game. I got torn to pieces by the pitcher and the team, whatever. It was an awful game. Game ends. What is important next? All right, I got recovery. What's important next? Okay, I got ice bath. Okay, what's important next? I got to eat. Okay, what's important next? I got to get home and be a father and a husband for the last couple hours before we go to bed and I get ready for tomorrow. So my mind is always set on what is important next, and it's that neutral way of keeping my mind there. So, right, because for obvious reasons, you don't want to be negative, obviously.
Right.
And then when you think of the positive side, for me, it's almost like a false reality. So, like, I went 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts. No, but I'm the best. I have the best swing. And it's like, no, you didn't. You sucked. You got it shoved up your butt today.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of it. So don't give yourself a false reality. Just focus on what you got to do next. And that's the ability to respond correctly to what is happening around you. And then my last principle is having big attitude. And big attitude doesn't mean being the guy that jumps on the table in every room that you come into, pounding your chest, saying, here I am. It's going back to what I was just explaining a couple minutes ago of everything that I do has an intent and a purpose behind it. When I walk in a room, you recognize my presence because I have an intent and a purpose behind everything that I'm doing. And what I need to get done, I get it done. And I get it done with the correct behaviors behind it, right? Because behaviors and attitudes are the only things you have complete control over.
Yeah.
And so those are the three principles that I live by each and every day. And if I can align with those three principles every day, then I can be the Jake Fraley that I need to be in any given situation, whether it's Jake Fraley, the competitor at the field, or it's Jake Fraley, the husband, or Jake Fraley, the father, or Jake Fraley, the son, right? So those three principles allow me to line up to be the person I need to be in any given situation on who I need to be in those given circumstances.
Yeah. And I'm glad we're doing this because it helps people. Even the three principle thing you said, where everyone can come up with their three principles and live by it. And I saw this firsthand with Danny Graves, who's going in the Reds Hall of Fame this year, when I did a podcast with him and he started talking about the depression that he went through and the mental health and what the counseling that he has received. And I'm like, why haven't you talked about this? He said, because no one asked me. And it's not like he just wanted to, you know, promote himself or whatever. But after that podcast, we got a lot of feedback about, wow, thank you very much for this really helped me because of someone like you or someone like you, where people out there would think, wow, how can he be depressed? I mean, he's making a ton of money. He's playing Major League Baseball. He's got a beautiful wife, a beautiful family. There's no way that he can be depressed or dealing with mental health. But it's all relative, and everyone deals with it in every facet of life. So if you were to talk to someone right now, what would you say beyond the three principles that would maybe help people?
I think you need to start with understanding that you have to have self-reflection. You know, every bit of behavior anything that you say in any given moment, right? Those are just reflections of how you think of yourself, right? And if you're having a constant battle of depression, anxiety, of having trouble with responding correctly to situations, right? Because you're either, I love this saying, but once you go through something, there's always another thing coming up on the horizon.
Yeah.
Constantly. It's never ending. That's just how life is. And so if you don't have an understanding of yourself, right, the self-reflection part of who you need to be on a daily basis, then you're never going to set yourself up to be able to respond correctly to what's going on. So you're constantly going to be damaging relationships around you. You're constantly going to be damaging yourself, right? Your self-understanding, yourself, what you think of yourself, your self-worth. So I think you start with, and this is the way that I did it, and something that Brian talks about as we go through this mental stuff, and he says it all the time, is that this stuff is going to impact your life more after baseball than it will during baseball. And like the stuff that I'm talking about isn't just specific to sports. This is life. This is life in general.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with him because I've seen the biggest impacts when it comes to being on the field. But I have seen even bigger impacts with me being a father and a husband at home and a son to my dad, right? And I think it all starts with what I talked about of having, you know, figuring out what those three principles are for yourself, because you're almost setting boundaries for yourself in the aspect of, okay, this is who I need to be. And it's almost a way of drawing a line in the sand and being like stepping over that line and being like, I'm not going back. So you're setting those boundaries for yourself. You're allowing yourself to be like, okay, this is who I want to be on a daily basis. This is who I need to be on a daily basis so that I can be the person that I need to be for my wife, for my husband, for my daughter, for my son, yeah, for my father, for my coworkers, for my boss, right? For my employees, whatever the case may be, for whatever your life is. And once you set up those principles and those boundaries for yourself, define them. You need to define what those are for you. So like when I laid out my principles, I defined them for what those are for me. And it could be as simple as just the definition of the word, but you could even go any deeper and be like, okay, this is more specific to me personally. And once you set up those principles and you have those boundaries, I think now it's just about learning about triggers for yourself. So the next part of it, which is a very, very hard part, I think it's the hardest part of it, which is self-awareness, but learning what specific things trigger you to act a certain way, and being a, like, very, very sensitive of everything that you're doing once you're making this, you know, I'm going to go all in on this, right? This mental side, the being a better me. And once you can focus on that, it allows yourself to be very sensitive to how you're acting and reacting to things. And then you'll pick up and be like, okay, this made me feel and act this way. This made me feel and act this way. And then once you figure that out, now there's another concept that it was the biggest thing when I first started this, and it still is the biggest thing for me. And there's a ton of research behind it. Her name's Amy Cuddy. She does a TED talk about it. It's phenomenal. And she talks about acting different than how you feel. So when you have these situations, right, so you've set these boundaries for yourself, now you have these situations in life that you have no control over, right? It's just once one problem happens, there's another one on the horizon. That's how life's always going to be. So now you allow yourself to be, okay, you have a problem come, something happens to you, it's awful, it's bad. Now you're going to have feelings and emotions because of what's happening to you. You have no control over that. Your feelings and your emotions, you have zero control over. You're going to feel how you feel for whatever reason. But what you do have control over is how you act.
Yeah.
And so these feelings and emotions, they're always going to be there. And you can't fight them. If you fight them, that's what's crippling. You have to just accept them. Okay, I feel how I feel. Like, register, this is how I feel. These are the emotions I have. Accept those feelings and emotions. But now what you do have control over is how you act. So your behaviors and your attitude. And what she talks about in this study, and it's so fascinating, it's amazing. And I've applied it since I've learned this months and months and months ago. And it's phenomenal how much it works. And she basically put two different groups into a room. And she had one group in a room with like a bunch of like superheroes with like in these big poses, like these big, you know, big attitude. I like using big attitude, but these like postures of like confidence and like, and then the other room was in a place that was like very gray in the colors. There was no pictures on the wall. And she asked one group to basically emulate the pictures of these superheroes in these postures. So they had them sit in this room and they were all emulating. So I think they were in a room very similar to like an office where they had like chairs and a table. And these people were, you know, had their feet up on the desk like they were the boss of the room. And they were sitting up in their chair with their shoulders back, their head up high, like they had some swagger to themselves. And then this other group was like hunched over, like no big postures, like kind of head down. And they drew their blood. And they came to realize that the group that had the big postures, like the superheroes and, you know, emulating a lot of confidence in how they were looking and their attitudes, they had a lot of testosterone that was released in their body. And when you're confident and things are going well for you, like when you think of when you're the most confident, that's what's going on. You're releasing like tons and tons of testosterone always. And then the other room, when they drew the blood, there was a lot of cortisol, more cortisol than testosterone. And cortisol is like the stress reactor, right? It's like your body goes into like fight or flight. And so the point of it is that when you have these situations that come up for you, or going again, you have your boundaries set and then you have these situations that happen for you, you need to act different than how you feel. So when these things happen, like have your shoulders back and your head up, like walk like you're 10 feet tall at all times. And when you're going through your day and these things are happening to you and you're acting in this certain specific way of your attitudes and behaviors, your feelings catch up to how you're acting. Your feelings and your emotions will change and align with how you're acting. So if you're walking with your head up, like you're 10 feet tall and your shoulders back, your feelings will line up with how you're acting. And now that cortisol that's being released will diminish, and that testosterone will start to be released, and you'll start feeling like you're confident. You'll start feeling good about yourself. And so that's like that, those, that, that, that's the stuff that you have complete control over, that you constantly need to be on top of.
Yeah. Then I actually went through a self-realization process myself. I just want people to know out there, it can happen for you. You can change. You can reprogram your brain.
No, absolutely. And I think you hit the head on the nail. Was there are so many, like everything that I just explained with the couple things that I use within kind of like my mental, you know, skill set or tools that I like to use, exercises. They are all were again given to me from, you know, Vanessa in house, and then Brian that's out of house for me. Where do you think those guys got it? They got it from books, right, and podcasts and YouTube videos.
You can even go, yeah, you can go on YouTube and
absolutely. And so
plenty of guys speaking, yes, experts speaking on, mm-hmm, the subject.
Absolutely. And Brian, his mentor was Ken Revisit. Ken Revisit has written a lot of books. Yeah. Russell Wilson's mental guy, Kevin Moab. Yeah. It Takes What It Takes. I've read that book 10 times, and it talks about neutral thinking, right? One of the things that I've talked about. So I think you hit it spot on that it is. I feel very fortunate and blessed that I have the opportunity to have the resources that I do. But everything that I'm learning is available for you. You just have to take the time to be able to look at Brian Kane, look at Ken Revisit, look at Kevin Moab. Like, go on YouTube, buy the books, read, gain the knowledge. But then here's the thing, is that you always hear the saying of knowledge is power. But knowledge is only power when you put it into action.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned your family. I mean, you got two kids?
Two kids. Yep. And we're in the process of adopting.
Yeah, that's where I was going with this. Why adoption for you?
Yeah, so like I said, we're believers in Jesus. My world is Jesus. He's done everything for me. He's given up his life for me on the cross. And I get into the gospel each and every day. And, you know, he's very specific about his will for each and every one of us, right? And his will is very simple, in the fact of us being disciples and spreading his word and his love with everything that we do, right? Putting it into action. And so me and my wife, you know, when you look at society, there are so many babies that are unfortunately aborted and also put up for adoption. And I want to, as a family, be able to take in one of those babies that doesn't have a home. When you're put into foster care, it's very tough.
Yeah.
And these babies, if they're not adopted, they're put into foster care. And so me and my wife really felt a calling from the Lord, and you know, being in our daily walk with the Lord and understanding what the gospel tells us, to be able to open up our doors to our house and our family to be able to bring in a baby, an adopted baby. So we felt like we got to a place where a lot of you know, time in our secret place with the Lord and praying, and we felt like we were in a place where we were like, okay, I think we're ready to do this. And so we started the process, and we started it about 6 months ago. It's a long process to get our papers to be able to officially adopt, but we got it done, and I think we got the papers about 2.5 weeks ago. So now we're just in the process of waiting for the baby that we want to be able to have an opportunity to adopt.
That's tremendous. Now, you and I have talked a few times about this, and I didn't know about the adoption process. And yeah, I'm not looking to bash the system here, but there needs to be some changes from what you've told me. I mean, this is craziness. Now, I get the vetting process, and that can be long, and I get that we have a shortage of people, and we want to make sure that we're placing these kids in good homes. I get all that. But the cost, that's insanity to me. If a good family is willing to open their doors and give a baby love so that they don't go into the foster care system, and we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars to get this done, and there are many people that obviously don't have the means to do that, mm-hmm, let alone, you know, add another child and the cost of that.
Yeah.
were you surprised at the cost? I mean, you could afford it, but others can't.
Yeah, it is very surprising.
They need to change that.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very tough. It gets even more tough when you see when that dollar amount is broken down, and where that money exactly goes. And it's just one of those things that, like I said, you have so many babies that don't have families, that don't have anywhere to go, and they don't have a say in it, right? They're their own individual self, but they're an infant. They have no idea. And you have, I think, so many families that would be more than willing to adopt, but like you said, they just don't have the resources to be able to do it, because it's about 5-6 times X what you said. So like it's incredible. But you do pay extra using an adoption agency. But if you don't use the adoption agency route, it becomes extremely tough, especially with my profession, because we move around so much. So like, the ability for us to be able to get approved through our home study of having a social worker come out, they're just going to deem us as a house that's unfit to have a baby because we move so much. So we had to take a little bit of an extra route with the using a specific agency that has worked with athletes in the past. So they work with us. But at the end of the day, I completely agree with you, because there's so many babies and so many families that would have more than welcomed a new baby into their family, but just don't have the resources.
You mentioned your faith. You're very open about talking about it. In today's day and age, as a Christian, it's gotten tougher and tougher. Mm-hmm. And the Bible talked about it. It's predicted should. That this is going to happen. You as a professional athlete, is it tougher nowadays? Because a lot of people are like, don't shove that down my throat. Mm-hmm. Do you walk the fine line of you don't want to shove it down someone's throat, but you also want to preach the gospel? Is there a fine line there for you?
No, there is a fine line. You don't want to come off as, that person on the corner of the street telling everybody they're going to go to hell.
Yeah.
I think for obvious reasons. Now, do you need to be obvious about what the gospel tells you? Of course. Like you said, there is a fine line of being socially aware within those conversations of opportunities to bring up the gospel, to bring up, your relationship, your personal, intimate love relationship with Jesus, right? Not just a understanding of who Jesus is or agreeing that, Jesus was a person who lived. Like, no, he's the savior of the world. He's the savior of you, even though maybe you don't even know him or you don't accept him. Like, he still got on the cross for you. And there is that fine line of understanding that within those social conversations with people, of just seeking those opportunities. And I do that, right? So especially when it has to do with, if you're just having general conversations, there's no real use of it, because people aren't seeking it, right? There's not a lot of opportunity. But we play a game that a lot of people struggle, right? We were just talking about how much people within the sport struggle from the mental side, and there's a lot of things within our game that are constant failure. And again, your brain doesn't associate with that's okay, because it's just how the game plays. It mm-hmm. just associates with, no, you're failing a lot. And so when you add all of these things in, there are a lot of guys in the clubhouse who are struggling. And then you have to, and if you have a guy that doesn't understand the mental fortitude that it takes and the mental help that you need to be able to do this job at a high clip, and you start putting that weight into their family life, like you and me were just explaining about how, you and me both have struggled with that as well. It becomes one big mess. And so when you have, a lot of these guys, I try to present myself as somebody who people can kind of have a safe space to come and talk to or get advice about. And I do that within my family too, with my brother and my sisters, right? So in those specific conversations, it's a lot easier, because they're seeking out like, hey, like I see like you've gone through a ton, right? Me personally. And how do you get through it? It was a perfect opportunity. Jesus. And it's like, well, what do you mean? And it's like, well, I know who Jesus is. And I'm like, do you really know who Jesus is? Because there's a difference between understanding who he is and having a personal, intimate love relationship with him. And for me, that was the biggest change in my walk, right? I grew up in Catholicism, no jab at Catholicism at all. Like, one of the best books I've read is from a deacon within the Catholic Church about Jesus and his life, death, and resurrection. But the specific church that I went to, it was a little tough growing up, because the way that they described within the Catholic Church of like praying to Mary, praying to saints, and then I would go back in the gospel and I wouldn't necessarily see it, and it forced me to get into the gospel to be like, okay, like, well, that doesn't sound right, but I don't really know, so let me go read and check. And as I started doing that, I started realizing that it's about having a personal relationship with Jesus. It's about getting into the gospel and understanding the character of our Father, right? Understanding who he is. There's so many layers to him. And the only way that you can do that is no different than like you and me, Jim. Like, I met you when I got traded over here. And like every day we say, you know, say hi to each other. How are you? And like, we have opportunities like this to be able to get on a podcast and learn about each other. We're developing a relationship by spending time with each other, by talking. It's no different. And so how do you do that? You get into the Word. How do you do that? You get into alone time with the Lord. You talk to him about everything that you're going through. You spend alone time with him. I referred to it a couple times earlier when we were talking, me and my wife getting into our secret place. And that secret place for me is setting aside specific time that I put the phone away, I put the gospel away. Usually it's when my wife and kids are asleep. I have no distractions and it's just me and the Lord. And it took me a long time to understand that because I've experienced some very profound things in my walk with the Lord. He's allowed me to experience some very cool stuff. And it got to a point where me personally, I would get into that secret place with him and I'd be like, okay, what do you got for me now, Lord? And it's like, no, that's not how this works. Yeah. And I've been in a season since 2018 where it's the understanding of being content with just being in his presence. And it's so powerful because that's what the gospel, like, that's all the gospel is. It's just being able to be okay with just being in his presence. Like, I don't want anything from you. I don't need anything to happen for me through you. Like, I just want to be in your presence. I just want to be with you. And when you do that, that's when that transformation of the heart happens. And now your heart posture is in a place where it's like, I am now completely surrendered and fearful to the Lord. Because all I want to do is be before him. All I want to do is walk in righteousness before him. Does that make me perfect? Absolutely not. I'm human. That's why I needed Jesus to die on the cross for me. And that's why the Father recognized that, because of sin, right? Jesus needed to die on the cross so that all of our sins could be wiped away, right? So his blood could wash over us and allow us to be able to go before his throne in his presence without a blemish on us because of the blood of Jesus. So every day I struggle with this tug of war of things that I you know, sin and stink with, and then, but I also have this understanding of who Jesus is and who he says I am. And that's where the power of the blood of Jesus is, because it's allowing me to be able to understand that I am wiped clean of those sins. And as you fight that battle, right? Paul talked about it as the fighting the good fight of faith. And that fight is, that daily fight is allowing my heart to be transformed on a daily basis. And that's what's allowing your heart posture to be in the right posture every single day when you're allowing yourself to be in that place with him every day.
Religion has changed over the years. Christianity, any religion. When I was a kid, it was much bigger, and the numbers would suggest less people are going to church, less numbers of Christians, and the demographics of this podcast would probably suggest that there's not as many Christians listening to this or those that are religious of any faith listening to this. And there's probably people that turned this thing off already because we're talking about this. And that's fine. But where does it stand in a major league clubhouse religion? Because I see a lot of crosses around the neck. I see a lot of praying. I see it a lot in a major league clubhouse. Is it there?
No, absolutely. I mean, there's every team is obviously not like the next one, right? You have a certain amount of guys that are believers, and then you have guys that aren't. Or you have guys.
See a lot of pointing to the sky.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's where having that complete understanding of the true gospel, and understanding that personal intimacy with Jesus is so vital, because there's a lot of, you know, okay, I want something out of this, right? Like, okay, Lord, I'll believe in you and I'll walk with you, but can you get me a hit tonight? And it's funny because like everybody's mind wants to go to that, right?
Yeah.
Because you have
not sure he cares about the hits.
I don't think he does. because in the same time when I'm in the box trying to get a hit, you know, the guy on the mound might have a personal relationship with Jesus too.
I need a strikeout.
So what is he gonna pick favorites here?
Exactly. That's what I've always wondered. It's like, yes. Well, the Lord was with us today to win. Well, he wasn't with the other team?
No.
Hold on
exactly.
a second.
And that's
which
it,
is it?
And that's the big thing. And it's funny because like guys that don't have that personal relationship with Jesus, but yet go to him for that. It's just a funny dynamic. But but I think it's also a perfect reflection of just like life in general. Like a lot of people are seeking him for what they want, which I think is so important because like the season, like I just described the season that I'm in, like I had a point before going into the season that he has me in that I've been in since 2017 where I was seeking, you know, something from him. Like it's no different. Like guys are seeking hits from him to have a relationship with him. Like I was showing up in my secret place with him being like, Lord, like let me experience something else. Like give me something else. And I think that's it's been amazing and it's so simple and it's not like, oh my gosh, exciting, like a miracle, like, you know, someone that's blind is receiving their sight and all this stuff. But it's just something as simple as, no, like, I don't need anything from you. I just want to be in your presence.
Well, you're an interesting cat, man. I appreciate the insight you've given today. And I hope that there's, you know, the old saying, if there's one person listening to this and it helps them, then we've accomplished a goal today. So I appreciate it, man. Good luck with the adoption thing. I hope that works out, that process. And I know that you have a very loving home. And that kid, the child that you receive is going to be blessed with. And I just commend you for doing it, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Nope, not a problem. That is Jake Fraley, everyone. And I hope that you realize that this podcast is about many different facets of baseball and life. And we experienced that today with Jake Fraley. Thanks for tuning into the Jim Day podcast, everyone. We hope you will join us again on down the road, and we will see you next time.